How you doing, guys? David Martinez podcast here, in case you hadn't guessed. It's July the 9th, a little while after the 4th of July. So I thought I would follow up the longest gap in between podcasts with the absolute shortest gap. This has now been less than a month. It's just been a couple weeks, I think. And I decided to do another one. I felt like I owed you guys. I owed you, all 4 or 5 of you, dedicated listeners of the podcast, at least one more. I said, you know what? You guys waited patiently. You guys submitted your passwords, and you played along with my little games here, and I felt like I owed you. I let you down last time, so this time I'm gonna throw in a little bonus podcast. And I don't know, who knows? Maybe podcasting with this kind of frequency will become the norm. But, you know, at the very least, I felt like for this one here, no promises. I'm not being the typical commitment-phobe of my generation. I'm going to say no promises. Let's just play this by ear. We don't have to label it. But I thought, you know, let me just do another one. The time having been so long and, you know, things in my life having happened, I had material, so screw it. My wife's out dropping her brother off at the airport, and I've got time, and I've got a house, so why don't I go ahead and use both of those things and throw out a podcast? Okay, so let me just get right into the podcast password. I feel like if I don't get into it now, I will forget it by the time I've been talking about all these other sort of things. So, podcast password, as any of you who have been listening to the show know, the podcast password is a mechanism. It's a, I don't want to say fail-safe, that's probably the wrong word for it, but it's a mechanism by which I can help determine which people out there in podcast land have actually been listening to the podcast and which people are just, you know, faking and saying like, oh, awesome job with the podcast. Yeah, I'm a total fan. What you talk about? Oh, yeah, I'll just look at the summary and check the cliff notes and ask my friends. Nope, this is the password. So if you're a fan of the show, you've been listening to the show, and you like the show, let me know by putting the podcast password in a message. Ideally, it's fun if you work it into a funny sentence. But, you know, just work it in there. So last podcast password was, oh, gosh, what even was it? Let me look back at my notes here. My handy-dandy notes. Push button. I had a few people put it out there. My good friend Mike Hamilton, my cousin Jessica, and gosh, who else? I don't know that anybody else did. If I'm missing you or if I'm forgetting you, I do apologize profusely. My memory is kind of bad for these sort of things, especially when I'm sort of when I put myself on the spot like this. I want to, of course, blame it on somebody. I was put on the spot. I can't remember them. But I put myself here on the spot. So it's, of course, it doesn't. When you're just sitting in a house by yourself with a microphone in your face, whose fault is it but your own if you mess something up or if you forget something? So, therefore, if you did give me the podcast password and I just forgot to mention it, I'm very sorry. I don't know, make it more clever and memorable next time. I'm putting this on you. All right. So this particular podcast password is Oberon's deodorant. I thought I'd make it a little bit more of a challenge this time to actually insert it into a sentence. So if you could work in Oberon's deodorant into a sentence, then, you know, bravo. I applaud you. I applaud you. That's some talent right there. That's some literary talent. That's some mythological talent right there. To work in something like Oberon's deodorant into a sense. Oberon, for those of you who don't know, is spelled O-B-E-R-O-N. So password for this particular podcast is Oberon's deodorant. All right. So, oh my gosh, it's getting warm in here already. That's the problem with this room here, is that it's a relatively small room. If any of you guys have visited my house here, it's... I probably haven't had as many people visit the house as actually listen to the podcast at this point. But it's a small room. I love it as an office, but it does get a little warm in here because I've got at least two computers, one of which is my heavy duty, you know, sort of workstation, and then my amplifier, and then my interface, and myself now generating heat. So it gets kind of warm in here quickly. So I'm going to go ahead and turn on the fan. I turned it off earlier because it makes noise and it picks up the microphone. But you know what? I don't care. I'd rather be cool than have the pristine, sterile production value, production quality that you guys have come to know and love about my podcast here. So house stuff. Somebody mentioned that they liked hearing about stuff from moving into a house, so I'll just kind of go with that theme. House stuff has been cool. The house is finally coming together to a point where it feels like a house and not a project. You know, the number of boxes that are just sort of strewn about with like random labels on there, like DVDs or Honest, you know, wintertime socks, have diminished. It's now mostly like, you know, some scattered bits of furniture. You know, the office is obviously complete. We now have a dining area. I was actually able to have my family over this past Sunday for a nice dinner, and it was nice. It was so nice to like have it was my father and my mother and my brother and his wife and my sister and her boyfriend Sterling. We're all here, and you know, we had a wonderful time, and it was there were a couple of like, you know. There wasn't any like house weirdness or house jankiness that got in the way. It was mostly like me showing them the new place, and it was so fun and it was so nice. And so it was kind of a milestone for me with this place. Like, oh, it was the first time I've actually been able to properly entertain. Like, I've had other people over, specifically like Anna's family has come over quite a bit to like help us with like random house projects. And so there's kind of some entertaining there, but like it's kind of half entertaining / half you're working here. It's like when you feed your laborers, you know, for the day. Like, it's not exactly the same thing as just having people over just to enjoy themselves and to relax. And so having my folks over this past Sunday was like the first time we've actually had company over for the express purpose of doing nothing but just relaxing and enjoying themselves. So that was kind of fun and that was kind of nice. Other than that, the house has been going well. Oh, but that leads me to my first real sort of house problem and disaster. Okay, so first topic. This is a weird one. I actually was really on the fence whether or not I wanted to talk about this because it's kind of, at least for me, it's kind of embarrassing because this is the kind of thing that I've never had to deal with or experience before. But, you know, I don't know what happened, and there was kind of a lot of material there, so I just decided to go with it. So we have we had, thank God, this is now past tense, a mouse in the house. A mouse in the house. And as cute as that phrase sounds, it was so not sort of cute. We kind of noticed it a couple of weeks ago when we were putting in some plumbing. When I was doing some plumbing work in the sink there. I had put in a new myself and my father-in-law had put in a garbage disposal and a new sink head in the kitchen. And apparently when they first opened the cabinet, the little mouse was under there and it ran under and it, you know, I guess presumably, you know, ran under the house and hopefully sort of outside. That was the first time we sort of noticed it. And since then, it's been dropping little hints around the house. And at some point within the last couple weeks or so, it discovered the pantry, which was a disaster. Absolute disaster. And this is, for those of you who've never had to deal with a mouse before, and I was totally in that camp before, like, you're either going to have like two things in your mind. Like, either it's going to be this completely awful, disgusting, like, just burn the house down and get the hell out of there kind of thing. Or, like, some people, and I was kind of in this camp beforehand, like, you think of, like, all the movies and television shows and cartoons of, like, mice and houses, and it almost seems like, oh, what a quaint little idea. Like, you've got your little mouse hole, and the little guy comes out, and it's this whole cute little war between the mother of the woman of the house and the mouse and all this. It's not. It's this awful, just violating, disgusting thing having this little vermin mammal running in your house and like walking into your pantry and finding one random thing with the wrappers torn open and eaten a little bit, and you're like, oh well, great, now I can't eat that thing. And it's just sort of terrible, and like you're disinfecting stuff and you're so the first thing that was suggested was like, oh, why don't you guys get some poison? Because, you know, my wife didn't want to have to deal with the whole idea of like a trap. Cause like a trap, you hear it clack, you know, you have to dispose of it. And it's kind of gross. Whereas like, oh, the whole idea of poison is you just throw some like poison out that presumably it's going to find appetizing and want to eat. Like, who doesn't want to eat poison? And It eats it, and then it finds some quiet and convenient place away from your home to just die, and then you're done with it. It's sort of, you know, out of sight, out of mind. So we tried the poison. So I bought a couple little things of this thing called Tomcat sort of poison, and it was it was kind of weird. It's like this little box that, you know, I guess presumably only the mouse could sort of crawl into to get this poison. And the poison itself was this like very weird, chalky looking green block. So I kind of went like, all right, well, whatever. I'm assuming they're scientists that work on stuff like this. They must know what mice like and don't like. So I'm sure they did the research. So I put that stuff out, and I put it out by like the pantry where the food was. And then I put one under the sink where I assumed the mouse was sort of getting into the house, and just sort of left it there. And, needless to say, the mouse didn't find this green chalky poison, appetizing, because of course there was like, you know, chocolate and salted peanuts and like other things in the pantry that were infinitely more desirable to the stupid mouse. And so it ate that instead and just walked right over the poison. So no fun, no cool there. By this point, I'm starting to get fairly angry with this mouse. And I have to admit, and Hannah started commenting on this too, I had never in my life known really just dark and violent thoughts toward an animal, toward one of God's prancing creatures until this moment, because it was such a bummer, especially with the poison stuff, like, because there's not that, like, obvious, like, snap and, like, oh, there's the dead mouse and now I get rid of it. You're always sort of, like, wondering, oh, did it get the poison? Did it not get the poison? Is it going to come back? And so we'd sort of, like, clean everything up and think, like, okay, hopefully maybe it grabs some poison and it would be cool. And then, like, we'd find, like, either, like maybe something was torn into in the pantry that we'd now have to throw away. Or like we'd open a drawer in like right by where the sink was, and we'd find like one turd, like just one turd, like, you know, just one single solitary turd. Like the mouse just was in there going, not yet, boy, I'm still kicking. You know, just that one insulting little, like, oh, you little jerk. Oh, I want to murder you. I started imagining just dark scenarios where, like, the mouse is dying painfully in front of its family. Like, the family's about to eat into the poison. It goes, no, don't. Vivian, don't. Steven, what's wrong? The food. There's something wrong with the food. Steven, what's going on? I don't think I'm going to make it, Vivian. Steven, no. What can I do? Nothing, Vivian. Just raise little Billy. Raise little Billy. I ate too much of the poison. I didn't want it just to be gone from our lives. I wanted this little guy to suffer because it just kept coming back. And it was making me so mad. So finally, I'm like, screw it. I don't want any more of this guesswork. And I want to, you know, I want to hear it. I want to know it. I want to see it. And I obviously want to try to use something, some kind of bait that I know it's going to like. So I bought these little snap traps, these little plastic snappy ones with these little snappy jaws. And I bought like, oh gosh, I ended up buying like 8 of them. I mean, I was out for blood with this thing. I needed to get it out of my house. It was just the thought of a disgusting little mammal making its way into our house and eating the food that we brought home was just so infuriating to me. Like I couldn't not just throw everything I had at it. So, after a few attempts, needless to say, at this point, the mouse was finally trapped, finally caught. And quick little tip, I'm not going to get too much into the mouse's sort of, you know, mortal end there, because it's not exactly a pleasant story, and my wife would probably not like me sharing the story at this point. But let's just say that this particular sort of plastic snap trap thing, it's like a little white plastic doodah with like a little red sort of thing that you put the, you know, bait on and, or, you know, whatever food you think it's going to like on, and it's supposed to like hit it. Unlike all the like clean and convenient and sterile little pictures that it portrays on the box, it's not enough to actually kill the thing. So if you want something that's humane, this is not the trap for you. It was actually kind of, it wasn't messy, but it was actually kind of sad, the whole little process. And, I mean, thankfully it's gone and hopefully we won't have to worry about it anymore. And we've, you know, kind of set some stuff out just to be safe, because everybody who hears about your mouse, not everybody, but the few people who have had to deal with mice before are, you know, always sort of give you the very helpful and encouraging little bit of tidbit that, oh, well, you know, if you've seen one, there's like probably, you know, 37,000 of them under your house. And like, I don't need to hear that. As far as I know, as far as we could see, there was one guy who we found the little hole he was coming out of from the, you know, from where the laundry, you know, sort of gas comes in from the laundry room. We saw where he's coming in from. You know, we got him. We're good. I mean, I guess in me and my wife's mind, that was the same mouse that's been this whole time. I mean, we didn't take like DNA or like, you know, what do they call that one thing? Like dental records to like verify that it was the same perpetrator that committed the other crimes in our house. But like, nor could I recognize that mouse from like any other mouse in a mugshot, you know, in a lineup. But, you know, I feel like I have this sense that there was, all right, it was just this one guy who managed to sort of, you know, make his way into our place and, you know, finds our place. We got him. I'm setting out a couple other guys, you know, a couple other traps in the pantry just to make sure. But we're going to get him. And I was just, it was just this whole weird and gross little adventure. And, you know, if you've never had, you know, and again, I don't even know if I'm like being weird about it too. Like, you know, it's just the kind of thing like, you know, the few people, half the people that I've talked to who have had to deal with this sort of thing before, they're like, oh yeah, like they all have like their mouse or like rat story they had to deal with at some point where like something got into the house or, you know, it was some particular apartment that they had to, you know, sort of deal with it. And so they just dealt with it. And those who haven't like get all weird and grossed out. Like, oh my God, what sort of squalor do you live in? Like, are you just like eating off the floors? Like what? And I, you know, and that, I feel like that. Like, I feel all weird and defensive. Like, we're really clean people. Like we bathe and we clean up our dishes and we sanitize. We've got Purell in the house, I swear. So it's, I don't know. It's a weird thing. And I'm so happy that it's dead. Like, on one hand, like I didn't want it to have to suffer. Like, I don't cherish the suffering of any animal, even if it's one that's, you know, stealing all of our food. But at the same time, like, you know, it's still a creature, it's still a living being, it's still one of God's prancing little creations, and I don't want it to suffer either. I just want it, you know, out of my house, dead or alive, you know, as the Western saying goes. Anyhow, all right, well, oh, I think I kind of forgot to do this earlier. So a couple of people have been asking like, oh, how do I subscribe to the podcast? So as I've indicated on a few of my earlier sort of website posts, you can get to it from iTunes, actually. So if like you have an iTunes account, and especially if you have an iPod or an iPhone or an iPad or an whatever, you can like go to your iTunes, search David. I think I come up if you search David Martinez. Fortunately, it's not that, at least on iTunes, it's not that common of a name. In real life, unfortunately, it's way too common. Like the Blockbuster I used to live at, there were at least two other David Martinez's. I sometimes will Google David Martinez just as a name and other things come up. One time, a David Martinez that was a serial killer in Texas came up, and that was kind of weird. Whose last words, I believe, were something like, only the blue sky and the green grass go on forever, and today's a good day to die. Huh. Anyway, moving on. So in real life, and I used to get calls from collectors who were looking for other David Martinez's. Oh my goodness, I should use this in my next podcast. I actually had child services after me for like a year because they thought I was some other David Martinez too. I need a podcast on that. Write that down. Writing it down in imaginary notepad paper. So going back to the subject at hand, if you go to iTunes and just search for David Martinez, you should find me there. You'll probably see like the picture of me with like headphones on, kind of wide-eyed with like messy hair. And you can just subscribe. And like anytime like I've posted a new podcast, it'll just show up in your iTunes. And then if you've been syncing it with your iPod, it'll show up in your iPod and you can sort of listen. and all is sort of right with the world. However, if you don't have one, you can still subscribe on my website, which is davidom.net. Hang on. I'm going to bring this up here. Talk away from the microphone. Probably still pick it up. Okay, yeah. On my website, davidom.net, there is a link in the upper right called iTunes RSS feed. If any of you have tried clicking on it, it's just... Yeah, you're just going to get a lot of gobbledygook. So what happens is the way you use that URL, you know, sort of normally, and this is, I'm having to provide tech support because like a few people have been like asking me, like, I have an Android. How do I subscribe? I don't know how to do it. So if you're listening to this from the website and you want to know how to get it on your mobile device and you don't have an iSomething, presumably then you probably have an Android. What you do is you go to your Android Play Store and you find some podcast player. I don't use them enough to really know what's a good one, so just find one. And then presumably there's some option to like subscribe to an iPod, you know, to a podcast. What you'll do is you'll take the you'll go to the iTunes RSS feed link, which is on my website. And when you go there, you'll see like the URL. It's like davidom.net/something-something-RSS. You'll copy that into your into the sort of link in your Android phone's iPod player, and then that will basically give you all the podcasts with the descriptions that are on the website, and the ability to sort of download and play them right from your phone or mobile device. So there's a little bit of tech support there. If you have any questions, just hit me up on my Facebook page. And I've got a Twitter account now, just because, like, as I've been doing this podcast thing, I'm like, okay, I should probably be a bit more into this whole social media thing. For me, like, Facebook was enough because it's like, all right, here are my friends, and then, you know, here's the stuff that I want to post, and then sort of that's it. But, like, all right, well, if I want to take this podcast thing at all seriously, I should probably be on more social media outlets. So I'm at least on Facebook. I'm at least on the Twitter. So you can kind of see like, and the Twitter feed's fun because like, in addition to like seeing the podcast stuff on there, you can also just see just random stuff that I post, like, you know, just funny pictures or, you know, little, you know, mostly just funny pictures because I'm not putting anything else up on there, but, you know, sort of whatever. But yeah, so there we go. That's how you do that. So you can, there's multiple ways to listen. You can actually just go to the website and just play it on the little player. You could download the MP3 from the website and copy it to your mobile device. If you have an whatever device, you can like listen to it from the iTunes store or from iTunes or any other podcast player. You can copy and paste the iTunes RSS feed link from my website into your player and then just sort of stream it from there. So you have options now. This is a free country. You have multiple options. You can listen to my podcast any way you like. So there we are. Okay, so moving on from that subject. I have two subjects here. Let me see which one here do I want to handle first. Let's do partisanship in this country. Only because it's something that is pressed upon me pretty much every day, like on Facebook, as I'm seeing people's Facebook feeds, and like the political spectrum of some of my friends goes from like, you know, wildly sort of liberal to like, you know, wildly sort of conservative. And so I certainly see the best and worst of what both people in both camps have to say about, you know, people and things. And I don't know. Like, I guess for me, the big thing, and I try not to, I don't want to sort of, you know, portray myself as having this like great and healthy balance between the two or whatever. And I certainly don't consider myself a centrist that way. But I guess at the very least, what I feel like is tremendously lacking is any sort of respect for especially the more polarized people become. And I feel like as things have gotten sort of more shaky in this country, things have gotten more polarized. And that's an interesting sort of phenomenon as well, because it's sort of obvious why that happens. And, you know, and I see this play out not only in, you know, in this country, but I've also seen this play out even in my own professional life where I feel like the more when things are going well, when people are successful, when something, when, you know, things are rolling on and people are making money, people's opinions tend to be less polarized because at the end of the day, well, it's not that important because, hey, we're all doing pretty decently here and we're all making money, so let's move on. And this kind of happened with, like, me when I had, you know, my own company. We had a bit more sort of people and infrastructure under our belt. You know, when things were going well back in the sort of mortgage and real estate days, there were fewer questions about how stuff was being run between me and my partners. But then as soon as like calamity hit and all of our real estate and mortgage clients started going out of business, suddenly everybody became a lot more opinionated about, you know, how things were being run. And the reason is obvious. The reason is because at the end of the day, both sides tend to think the degree to which things have gone wrong is the degree to which they haven't been done our way. And again, this is not a conservative failing. This is not a liberal failing. This is a failing that both sides tend to do quite a bit. And our own economic woes are no exception. It is no coincidence that both the sort of Occupy movement and the Tea Party movements have both come out as a direct result of, you know, sort of the economic calamity of, you know, sort of 2008. Because at the end of the day, when things are going well, or at least well enough, you know, not to say that we were sort of rolling in the dough beforehand, but when things are going well enough, most people just kind of, you know, they may have their opinions about how we can do things and how we can do things better. But for the most part, people just kind of like, eh, whatever. They don't, you know, they care. They certainly care a lot less. Once, however, things, you know, start to go sideways, both people become a lot more sort of tightly sort of wound around like, okay, the degree, you know, this is why it's gone so bad because we've been hanging on to the failed politics of such and such. Or like, I told you this whole scheme wasn't going to work because you guys are so... And it's just such a painful and annoying sort of thing because, like, oh my gosh, the stuff that people post is just, it's just bananas most of the time. It's just bananas. And again, I'm not, you know, I'm sure half of you guys are going like, oh yeah, totally, those conservatives are da da da. And the other half is going like, oh yeah, you know, those liberals are just going crazy. It's kind of certainly both. And both sides have certainly started taking that particular stance on it, and it's just so disheartening. And I think disheartening not because people disagree. At the end of the day, we can never really expect to like fully agree on a particular plan or a particular way of doing things. Part of doing things as a team and doing things together is learning how to live in the tension of disagreement and of not, you know, all sort of being on the same boat or on the same ship. Am I still recording? Hang on. Part of it is just learning how to live in the tension of not necessarily agreeing with everything and still being able to be friends and still being able to be respectful and still kind of go like, look, at the end of the day, I don't like this guy, but because it's important for this country, I hope he succeeds because, you know, hey, I love this country and I want us to be united more than I want to be right. And I think that's part of the problem is people just want to be right more than they want to sort of have a united front on something. And it's easier to sort of vilify the other side and assume that they're stupid and assume they don't have good and honest intentions and, you know, just assume all these other sort of unflattering kinds of things. A man by the name of Timothy Keller in a book that he wrote called, I think it was the Reason for God. I think it was the book. He had a really great quote in there in which he says something, and I'm paraphrasing here, something to the effect of, once we learn to regard opposing views in their strongest form, we can then elevate ourselves to the level of disagreement. And that has sort of stuck with me as a great way of articulating exactly what the problem is with so many people in their sort of strong bipartisanship, strong political sort of partisanship. And like, those guys are idiots and those guys are stupid and immoral and this, that, and the other thing. And like, how could any clear thinking, rational person sort of think that way? And I don't know. I don't know if this is, I feel like, you know, my own experience seems to have taught me that people that are younger, more sort of more in my age group and below, tend to kind of fall into this trap more. Whereas the few relationships I've noticed in my life where it's been a couple of people who, you know, may have disagreed tremendously, you know, on, you know, politics or religion or, you know, some moral something or other, have still been able to get on and be friends and be respectful of each other. And so for me, I kind of wonder, is it just like an age thing where when you're young, you sort of have this energy and this vitality and maybe a certain lack of experience, which makes you kind of go like, ah, those guys are jerks and they're awful. And then maybe life sort of teaches you as you go on that, like, you know, I still disagree with them, but, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean they're bad people or they're not well-intentioned people or that they're not necessarily people whose intelligence I can respect. I can disagree with, but I can still respect. So I don't know if it's that or if it's a generational thing where maybe our generation has lost the ability to sort of respectfully disagree. My favorite author, G.K. Chesterton, who I quote frequently on this podcast and in other, my Facebook feed and other things. He had a relationship with a gentleman by the name of Bernard Shaw, and who's sort of a contemporary of his. I don't know how many of you may have heard of Mr. Bernard Shaw before, but I always sort of take their relationship, their sort of friendly enemy, what we now call frenemy relationship, as kind of a model for what this should look like, because they were ideologically so polarized from each other and really did not and just disagreed with each other so vehemently, but at the same time had a warm regard and a warm respect for each other. Chesterton, and I think it was his book, which one? It was Orthodoxy, I think. Basically said that, like, you know, may Mr. Bernard Shaw, he's a great gentleman. He has a warm and a big and a generous heart, but, you know, a heart in the wrong place. And I think it was in his book, Heretics, where he actually defends Bernard Shaw against some other things that people were saying about him at the time, where the people said, like, hey, people criticize Bernard Shaw for being a sort of a quick change artist and somebody who will defend anything and sort of changes his positions all the time. To which Chesterton said, like, no, it's actually quite the opposite. Bernard Shaw is not somebody who will, you know, is a quick change artist or somebody who just sort of is constantly shifting positions and defending anybody and anything. His strength comes from the fact that he is so tremendously consistent that it's the world that sort of rushes past him. He's climbed into a fixed star and he defends his fort day and night from his, you know, from his fixed position on things. He applies the Shaw test, you know, rapidly and rigorously to everything. It's the sort of evenness of his standard, which make people think that he's sort of wild because everybody else in the world is just flying from madness to madness. The politicians are only seem sane because they always happen to be in step with the fashionable madness. And it was the sort of great defense that he had of this guy, even though, again, he sort of disagreed with most of what he had thought. And I'm not as familiar with what Bernard Shaw has said about Chesterton, except for two quotes. One in which he says he regarded Mr. Chesterton as a man of colossal genius. And another quote in which he said that the world is not thankful enough for G.K. Chesterton. And I remember how much that struck me when I first heard that, because can you imagine if and I'm going to use just two random examples here. I'm certainly not advocating or demeaning one or the other. But can you imagine if somebody like Bill Maher said that about like Sean Hannity or something like that, like, or just two, you know, people who politically or ideologically were almost polar opposites could openly compliment each other in public? Like, can you imagine that? You know, we can't even fathom that kind of respect across party lines, because there are no examples of that, at least none that come to my mind. And it's such a, I don't know, I think we would do so much better. I think we would get along so much better if we could learn, in the words of Mr. Keller, to how did he put it again? To sort of represent opposing views in their strongest form so that way we could finally, finally elevate ourselves to the level of disagreement. So that's sort of my thing on that. And then my last subject for the whole podcast is with regards the World Cup. The World Cup is upon us, everyone. You know, with sort of nations and sort of soccer and sort of people and fans and all this sort of thing. And, you know, there are any number of subjects that can be sort of attached to the whole World Cup thing. But the one I'm choosing is kind of stems somewhat from my previous topic, which is for me, like, soccer was just a sport like any other sport. And if you've listened to the podcast before, you know that by that I mean it's just I've just never really had a particular interest in it. Not for anything particular to soccer, but just because, you know, watching soccer and following teams and following players has just been something that has I've never been able to sort of find interest in. And again, unlike many people who make statements like that, it's not because of any failing in soccer or any failing in sports in general. It's really, for me, probably just a failing in myself. There is something in me that doesn't have the sort of energy or attention it takes to really, or maybe the camaraderie or whatever it is that I'm lacking that just doesn't allow me to really sort of get into sports and home teams and you know, watching the big game and sort of cheering like so many of my good and close friends who I love and respect very much seem to be able to do. It's just something I've just never had in my life. I've just never been. I can totally get into a live sporting event, and I love it when people invite me to like watch the game or the fight at their place, and mostly because of like how excited people are and how much energy there is, and just sort of being around people that I love or you know who are enjoying something. But as far as the thing itself, like I could never just sit there and watch a sporting event, and soccer, you know, hey, is no exception. So, you know, speaking as a complete outsider from soccer in general, the thing that I found funny, and I don't recall this happening in previous sort of World Cups, but definitely seems to be the case this time, is that soccer seems to have become a politically partisan sort of issue. And by that, I mean, as has been pointed out, sort of highly cosmopolitan and sort of very progressive and liberal types feel the need to sort of really like it. And very conservative and sort of, you know, sort of stubborn types feel their need to like really sort of dislike it. And it's been kind of funny. I think the most sort of the grossest and most obvious example that sort of come up recently was, I guess, Miss Ann Coulter recently posted a whole thing about why she doesn't like soccer and how it's a sign of moral decay and all this other sort of thing, which was sort of interesting. Half of what she said I found was somewhat parroted from another article that I had read previously from another gentleman whose name I can't recall, who posted an article simply saying, you know, why his whole thing was that, you know, people don't like soccer because it's un-American, and it's un-American because it does not do enough to highlight individual achievement. And he sort of listed some reasons why, and why certain other sports that are popular here, like football and baseball and so on and so forth, you know, allow to highlight individual achievements more than soccer seems to, which is why it doesn't seem to be popular here. And Ann Coulter, I found, you know, in her article, seemed to kind of parrot that a bit, as well as some other sort of random things, you know, about why she thought it was boring and yada, yada, yada. And, you know, I don't know enough about the sport itself. I'm not vested enough in the sport to sort of agree with or even disagree with what either of those people had to say on the sport. I guess, I don't know. It's sort of weird because, yeah, for a couple of reasons, I do feel like it's become this, it has become a weird sort of partisan sort of issue. I hesitate to say even this much because I certainly did not care for, and I certainly disagree with most of what Ms. Coulter had to say about the article. But there was a small thing which she almost got half right, which was something about how, like, you know, liberals only like it because it's European, which I don't think that's quite true. But as far as I can tell, there's only a few types of people in this country, and I'll say very specifically in this country because it's kind of a novel thing in this country, at least you know in the sort of mainstream to like soccer. But there's a few types of people in this country that tend to like soccer. One is people who have come from cultural or sort of backgrounds in which soccer was a very normal part of life, like any other sport in this country. A lot of Hispanics and other sort of Latin American types of people kind of fall into this category. People who are expatriates from other countries sort of fall into this country. Like, it was just a sport that is popular in their own home country that they sort of played as a kid and that they sort of enjoy seeing now as adults. And it's, again, it's a sport like any other sport. People that I know that to me fall into this category, watch soccer and they also watch the UFC fights when they come up and they support the local baseball team and or the local, basketball or football teams. And again, soccer is just one more sport that they enjoy watching for all of the great and wonderful virtues that sports and sportsmanship and watching sports and having sports, sort of teams and all those sort of local loyalties and, sort of home team kind of, fun things. For the people who sort of, are sort of wrapped up in all that like that, it's just one more thing to love in that way. And hey, you know what? More power to them. My blessings to them. The other type of people who enjoy watching soccer, I've noticed, tend to be the same types of people who like the Olympics. They like the spectacle of countries, sort of competing against each other. It's like, countries that ordinarily may not have quite as much interaction with each other and are not pitted against each other in such, sort of obvious and sort of focused kind of ways. Like, oh, it's Chile against like the Netherlands. Or it's like, Germany versus Brazil or something like that. And they sort of enjoy the spectacle of seeing countries sort of compete on this sort of world sort of, this global sort of platform and seeing how the sort of the sort of strengths and the peculiarities and the of how different countries act and think and do things sort of play out in their teams. The sort of, I think as some commentators were, the ruthless efficiency of the German team and the, or the sort of drive and ambition of the American team. And, I don't know. I haven't read too much about it, so I couldn't comment on other teams. But the people who sort of enjoy that aspect of sort of that, that really get a kick out of watching sort of teams from all over the world compete on this sort of international stage. But there's another type, and this is the point where I almost can kind of half understand where Ms. Coulter is coming from, who are just sort of, I don't know. They're just sort of weak and fashionable, very cosmopolitan sort of types who just like anything that's just sort of new and novel and fashionable and who ordinarily have no interest in sports and sportsmanship and athletic prowess or anything like that. But like, oh, it's, soccer. It's the sort of like international thing. Like I'm a world citizen. Look how much I love soccer. And like, there's definitely that. I've certainly seen that play out here and there, where again, you're normally not the kind of person who likes this sort of thing at all, but you happen to like it because it's such a novel thing here in this country and yada, yada, yada. I feel like, however, as soccer becomes more of a normal thing in this country and, I don't know if it will or not, but if it continues to catch on and just becomes a sport like any other sport in this country, I feel like hopefully those types of people and those types of fans will just sort of go away. Because again, it's like that novelty will have worn off. They'll realize they never really cared for the sport or anything about it, in general in the first place. And, all they're left with is just yet one more sport that they don't care about and they probably demean privately with all their little sort of, hoi polloi friends and, go on from there. So there's a part of, even though I think it was grossly exaggerated and misdirected, there was a part of Ms. Coulter's whole little spiel that I could kind of identify with. And again, considering the source, I hesitate to say even that much, but I could sort of see a bit where she's coming from. Where I think the conservatives, I think, fail in this respect is that they observe this kind of reaction from the sort of sort of gushing and sycophantic kind of, you know, cosmopolitan sort of progressive person who obviously doesn't like it, but only likes it because, you know, it's like, oh, just such a fashionable sort of, you know, cultured thing to do. And they kind of dislike soccer because of the type of people they feel like it's associated with. So rather than just go like, okay, those people are idiots and just sort of move on, they have to then assume that the thing itself must be evil. The thing itself must be wrong. There must be something wrong with the thing itself. It's not enough to say like, oh, I personally don't find soccer interesting. Maybe I think it's boring. Maybe I don't like the low scoring aspect of it. Maybe this, that, or the other thing. But it's not enough to say I don't care for it. Just like most people in this country feel very free to say like, eh, I don't care for baseball. Like, eh, I don't care for basketball. Eh, hockey's not my thing. Eh, you know, for whatever reason, like, you know, baseball may be too boring for some people, or football may be too sort of weird and technical for other people, or basketball, who knows? People have, you know, not everybody likes every sport, and people have their reasons for liking or disliking sports, and it's a very normal part of being a citizen of any place or any sort of country. But I feel like with soccer, because of the, you know, because of its sort of novelty and because of the, some of the associations that it has for some kinds of people, they can't just say like, yeah, it's not my thing. I don't really care for it. They have to then read some like, you know, like some socialist ideologies into it, or like, you know, that it's sort of weird or you know, sort of boring or evil and whatnot, and like. No, like again, I feel like if soccer became as prosaic as any other sport here in this country, they wouldn't feel the need to sort of intellectualize their personal dislike for it. They could just say like, yeah, it's not my thing, and just move on, like normal people do with other sports they find sort of normal in their lives. But no, they have to find reasons why it's sort of evil. I read a follow-up article that Ms. Coulter posted. How like, I don't understand why like people are getting all on my case about this. You know, like why everyone's, you know, telling, you know, she made some, she's a perfect example of one of these people who she can, in the words again of Mr. Chesterton, she has a talent for sarcasm. She can't laugh, but she can only sneer. And that's partially why I just find her so distasteful. But she said something like, I don't understand why everyone's trying to get me to like soccer. And I feel like people aren't trying to get you to like it. People are just trying to say that, at the very least, like the sport itself isn't evil or wrong. You just happen to dislike it because of certain associations, because maybe the gameplay itself isn't fun for you, but you feel now that you have to sort of turn it into this like, oh, this whole sport is the result of, you know, the moral decay of this country. And I don't agree with that either. Again, I'm not a fan of the sport, but at the same time, I can just look at it and go like, all right, to me, just another sport. And when I see like sitcoms and other situational sort of stuff from like other countries where soccer is just a much more normal part of life, like you have like the gushing and adoring fans with the face paint and the, oh yeah, just like you do in this country with people who cheer at bars when, you know, the Lakers sort of, you know, sort of, you know, win a match or whatever. But you also have people who very freely make fun of it. I saw a funny German commercial where like somebody, you know, they highlighted the very sort of, you know, prima donna quality of some of these, you know, sort of soccer players and said like, dude, you should totally watch rugby instead. Cause again, like it's common enough and a prosaic enough of a thing in that country to where you got some people who love it and some people who are just like, dude, that sport sucks. You should really check out this sport instead. And it's not tied to any political ideology, which conservatism and progressivism are two things which are completely alien to soccer itself. Soccer is just a sport. It's just a game that doesn't have anything to do or say about any one of those ideologies. And so if people would stop reading that into soccer, that would be awesome. Well... gosh, I guess that's about it. Jeez, I went on long again. I need to cut these things down to 15 minutes or 30 minutes again. All right, well, that being said, thank you guys so much for listening. Again, I felt like I owed you one after, you know, waiting so long this last time. Maybe I'll do another one in a couple more weeks. Who knows? But in the meantime, thanks for tuning in. Subscribe. Follow me on Twitter. Hey, buy me a meal or a beer sometime, you know, do whatever, show your appreciation. All right. Thanks. And have a wonderful and safe July.